Chapter 108. A dissolution of partnership. I did not allow my resolution, with respect to the parliamentary debates, to cool. It was one of the irons I began to heat immediately, and one of the irons I kept hot, and hammered at, with a perseverance I may honestly admire. I bought an approved scheme of the noble art and mystery of stenography which cost me 10 and 6 pence, and plunged into a sea of perplexity that brought me, in a few weeks, to the confines of distraction. The changes that were rung upon dots, which in such a position meant such a thing, and in such another position something else, entirely different. The wonderful vagaries that were played by circles. The unaccountable consequences that resulted from marks like flies' legs, the tremendous effects of a curve in a wrong place, not only troubled my waking hours, but reappeared before me in my sleep. When I had groped my way, blindly, through these difficulties, and had mastered the alphabet, which was an Egyptian temple in itself, there then appeared a procession of new horrors, called arbitrary characters. The most despotic characters I have ever known, who insisted, for instance, that a thing like the beginning of a cobweb meant expectation, and that a pen and ink skyrocket stood for disadvantageous. When I had fixed these wretches in my mind, I found that they had driven everything else out of it. Then, beginning again, I forgot them. While I was picking them up, I dropped the other fragments of the system. In short, it was almost heartbreaking. It might have been quite heartbreaking, but for Dora, who was the stay and anchor of my tempest-driven bark. Every scratch in the scheme was a gnarled oak in the forest of difficulty, and I went on cutting them down, one after another, with such vigor, that in 3 or 4 months I was in a condition to make an experiment on one of our crack speakers in the Commons. Shall I ever forget how the crack speaker walked off from me before I began, and left my imbecile pencil staggering about the paper, as if it were in a fit? This would not do, it was quite clear. I was flying too high, and should never get on, so I resorted to Traddles for advice, who suggested that he should dictate speeches to me, at a pace, and with occasional stoppages, adapted to my weakness. Very grateful for this friendly aid, I accepted the proposal, and night after night, almost every night, for a long time, we had a sort of private parliament in Buckingham Street, after I came home from the doctor's. I should like to see such a parliament anywhere else. My aunt and Mr. Dick represented the government, or the opposition, as the case might be, and Traddles, with the assistance of Enfield speakers, or a volume of parliamentary orations, thundered astonishing invectives against them. Standing by the table, with his finger in the page to keep the place, and his right arm flourishing above his head, Traddles, as Mr. Pitt, Mr. Fox, Mr. Sheridan, Mr. Burke, Lord Castlereagh, Viscount Sidmouth, or Mr. Canning, would work himself into the most violent heats, and deliver the most withering denunciations of the profligacy and corruption of my aunt and Mr. Dick, while I used to sit, at a little distance, with my notebook on my knee, fagging after him with all my might and main. The inconsistency and recklessness of Traddles were not to be exceeded by any real politician. He was for any description of policy, in the compass of a week, and nailed all sorts of colors to every denomination of mast. My aunt, looking very like an immovable chancellor of the exchequer, would occasionally throw in an interruption or two, as here. Apostrophe apostrophe or no. Apostrophe or oh. When the text seemed to require it, which was always a signal to Mr. Dick, a perfect country gentleman, to follow lustily with the same cry. But Mr. Dick got taxed with such things, in the course of his parliamentary career, and was made responsible for such awful consequences, that he became uncomfortable in his mind sometimes. I believe he actually began to be afraid he really had been doing something, tending to the annihilation of the British Constitution, and the ruin of the country. Often and often we pursued these debates until the clock pointed to midnight, and the candles were burning down. The result of so much good practice was that by and by I began to keep pace with Traddles pretty well, and should have been quite triumphant if I had had the least idea what my notes were about. But, as to reading them, after I had got them, I might as well have copied the Chinese inscriptions of an immense collection of tea chests, or the golden characters on all the great red and green bottles in the chemist's shops. There was nothing for it but to turn back and begin all over again. It was very hard, but I turned back, though with a heavy heart, and began laboriously and methodically to plod over the same tedious ground at a snail's pace, stopping to examine minutely every speck in the way, on all sides, and making the most desperate efforts to know these elusive characters by sight wherever I met them. I was always punctual at the office, at the doctor's too. And I really did work, as the common expression is, like a cart horse. One day, when I went to the Commons as usual, I found Mr. Spenlow in the doorway looking extremely grave, and talking to himself. As he was in the habit of complaining of pains in his head, he had naturally a short throat, and I do seriously believe he overstarched himself. I was at first alarmed by the idea that he was not quite right in that direction, but he soon relieved my uneasiness. Instead of returning my good morning with his usual affability, he looked at me in a distant, ceremonious manner, and coldly requested me to accompany him to a certain coffee house, which, in those days, had a door opening into the Commons, just within the little archway in St. Paul's Churchyard. I complied, in a very uncomfortable state, and with a warm shooting all over me, as if my apprehensions were breaking out into buds. When I allowed him to go on a little before, on account of the narrowness of the way, I observed that he carried his head with a lofty air that was particularly unpromising, and my mind misgave me that he had found out about my darling Dora. If I had not guessed this, on the way to the coffee house, I could hardly have failed to know what was the matter when I followed him into an upstairs room, and found Miss Murdstone there, supported by a background of sideboard, on which were several inverted tumblers sustaining lemons, and two of those extraordinary boxes, all corners and flutings, for sticking knives and forks in, which, happily for mankind, are now obsolete. Miss Murdstone gave me her chilly fingernails, and sat severely rigid. Mr. Spenlow shut the door, motioned me to a chair, and stood on the hearth rug in front of the fireplace. "Have the goodness to show Mr. Copperfield," apostrophe said Mr. Spenlow, "what you have in your reticule, Miss Murdstone." Apostrophe, I believe it was the old identical steel-clasped reticule of my childhood, that shut up like a bite. Compressing her lips, in sympathy with the snap, Miss Murdstone opened it, opening her mouth a little at the same time, and produced my last letter to Dora, teeming with expressions of devoted affection. "I believe that is your writing, Mr. Copperfield?" Apostrophe said Mr. Spenlow. I was very hot, and the voice I heard was very unlike mine, when I said, "It is, sir." Apostrophe, if I am not mistaken, apostrophe said Mr. Spenlow, as Miss Murdstone brought a parcel of letters out of her reticule, tied round with the dearest bit of blue ribbon, "those are also from your pen, Mr. Copperfield?" Apostrophe, I took them from her with a most desolate sensation, and, glancing at such phrases at the top, as "my ever dearest and own Dora, apostrophe my best beloved angel, apostrophe my blessed one forever," and the like, blushed deeply, and inclined my head. "No, thank you." Apostrophe said Mr. Spenlow, coldly, as I mechanically offered them back to him. "I will not deprive you of them. Miss Murdstone, be so good as to proceed." Apostrophe, that gentle creature, after a moment's thoughtful survey of the carpet, delivered herself with much dry unction as follows: I must confess to having entertained my suspicions of Miss Spenlow, in reference to David Copperfield, for some time. I observed Miss Spenlow and David Copperfield, when they first met, and the impression made upon me then was not agreeable. The depravity of the human heart is such apostrophe, you will oblige me, ma'am, apostrophe interrupted Mr. Spenlow, by confining yourself to facts. Apostrophe, Miss Murdstone cast down her eyes, shook her head, as if protesting against this unseemly interruption, and with frowning dignity resumed. Since I am to confine myself to facts, I will state them as dryly as I can. Perhaps that will be considered an acceptable course of proceeding. I have already said, sir, that I have had my suspicions of Miss Spenlow, in reference to David Copperfield, for some time. I have frequently endeavored to find decisive corroboration of those suspicions, but without effect. I have therefore forborne to mention them to Miss Spenlow's father, looking severely at him, knowing how little disposition there usually is in such cases, to acknowledge the conscientious discharge of duty. Apostrophe, Mr. Spenlow seemed quite cowed by the gentlemanly sternness of Miss Murdstone's manner, and deprecated her severity with a conciliatory little wave of his hand. On my return to Norwood, after the period of absence occasioned by my brother's marriage, apostrophe pursued Miss Murdstone in a disdainful voice, and on the return of Miss Spenlow from her visit to her friend Miss Mills, I imagined that the manner of Miss Spenlow gave me greater occasion for suspicion than before. Therefore I watched Miss Spenlow closely. Apostrophe, dear, tender little Dora, so unconscious of this dragon's eye. Still, apostrophe resumed Miss Murdstone, I found no proof until last night. It appeared to me that Miss Spenlow received too many letters from her friend Miss Mills, but Miss Mills being her friend with her father's full concurrence, apostrophe another telling blow at Mr. Spenlow, it was not for me to interfere. If I may not be permitted to allude to the natural depravity of the human heart, at least I must be permitted, so far to refer to misplaced confidence. Apostrophe, Mr. Spenlow apologetically murmured his assent. Last evening after tea, apostrophe pursued Miss Murdstone, I observed the little dog starting, rolling, and growling about the drawing room, worrying something. I said to Miss Spenlow, Dora, what is that the dog has in his mouth? It's paper. Miss Spenlow immediately put her hand to her frock, gave a sudden cry, and ran to the dog. I interposed, and said, Dora, my love, you must permit me. Apostrophe, oh Jip, miserable spaniel, this wretchedness, then, was your work. Miss Spenlow endeavored, apostrophe said Miss Murdstone, to bribe me with kisses, work boxes, and small articles of jewelry that, of course, I pass over. The little dog retreated under the sofa on my approaching him, and was with great difficulty dislodged by the fire irons. Even when dislodged, he still kept the letter in his mouth, and on my endeavoring to take it from him, at the imminent risk of being bitten, he kept it between his teeth so pertinaciously, as to suffer himself to be held suspended in the air by means of the document. At length I obtained possession of it. After perusing it, I taxed Miss Spenlow with having many such letters in her possession, and ultimately obtained from her the packet which is now in David Copperfield's hand. Apostrophe, here she ceased, and snapping her reticule again, and shutting her mouth, looked as if she might be broken, but could never be bent. You have heard Miss Murdstone, apostrophe said Mr. Spenlow, turning to me. I beg to ask, Mr. Copperfield, if you have anything to say in reply? Apostrophe, apostrophe, the picture I had before me, of the beautiful little treasure of my heart, sobbing, and crying all night of her being alone, frightened, and wretched, then of her having so piteously begged and prayed that stony-hearted woman, to forgive her of her having vainly offered her those kisses, work boxes, and trinkets of her being in such grievous distress, and all for me very much impaired the little dignity I had been able to muster. I am afraid I was in a tremulous state for a minute or so, though I did my best to disguise it. There is nothing I can say, sir, apostrophe I returned, except that all the blame is mine. Dora apostrophe, Miss Spenlow, if you please, apostrophe said her father, majestically. Apostrophe was induced and persuaded by me, apostrophe I went on, swallowing that colder designation, to consent to this concealment, and I bitterly regret it. Apostrophe, you are very much to blame, sir, apostrophe said Mr. Spenlow, walking to and fro upon the hearth rug, and emphasizing what he said with his whole body instead of his head, on account of the stiffness of his cravat and spine. You have done a stealthy and unbecoming action, Mr. Copperfield. When I take a gentleman to my house, no matter whether he is 19, 29, or 90, I take him there in a spirit of confidence. If he abuses my confidence, he commits a dishonorable action, Mr. Copperfield. Apostrophe, I feel it, sir, I assure you, apostrophe I returned. But I never thought so, before. Sincerely, honestly, indeed, Mr. Spenlow, I never thought so, before. I love Miss Spenlow to that extent, apostrophe, pooh, nonsense. Apostrophe said Mr. Spenlow, reddening. Pray don't tell me to my face, that you love my daughter, Mr. Copperfield. Apostrophe, apostrophe, could I defend my conduct, if I did not, sir? Apostrophe, apostrophe, I returned, with all humility. Can you defend your conduct if you do, sir? Apostrophe, apostrophe said Mr. Spenlow, stopping short upon the hearth rug. Have you considered your years, and my daughter's years, Mr. Copperfield? Have you considered what it is to undermine the confidence that should subsist between my daughter and myself? Have you considered my daughter's station in life, the projects I may contemplate for her advancement, the testamentary intentions I may have with reference to her? Have you considered anything, Mr. Copperfield? Apostrophe, very little, sir, I am afraid. Apostrophe, I answered, speaking to him as respectfully and sorrowfully as I felt. But pray believe me, I have considered my own worldly position. When I explained it to you, we were already engaged, apostrophe, I beg, apostrophe said Mr. Spenlow, more like Punch than I had ever seen him, as he energetically struck one hand upon the other. I could not help noticing, that even in my despair, that you will not talk to me of engagements, Mr. Copperfield. Apostrophe, apostrophe, the otherwise immovable Miss Murdstone laughed contemptuously in one short syllable. When I explained my altered position to you, sir, apostrophe I began again, substituting a new form of expression for what was so unpalatable to him, this concealment, into which I am so unhappy, as to have led Miss Spenlow, had begun. Since I have been in that altered position, I have strained every nerve, I have exerted every energy, to improve it. I am sure I shall improve it in time. Will you grant me time any length of time? We are both so young, sir, apostrophe. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.